Yeah, $70 for the hoodie and shipping.
It was $50 extra to ship it to Canada, $50 US extra.
Yeah.
And so it come out to $130 US. And you convert it to Canadian, that is a $200 hoodie that I will not wear while I eat.
Yeah, that is too good of an economic. Can I use that for class?
Disclaimer time. This is where I tell everyone to lighten up. It's just a podcast. Trading is like that roller coaster at the amusement park. Thrilling, unpredictable, and potentially stomach churning. What works for one person might leave another clutching their hat in the wind. Our hosts and guests, they're awesome, knowledgeable, full of insights, but we're not financial advisors. So don't rush to make any investment decisions based solely on our banter. Always consult with a professional or do your own research. Plus, let's face it, we like to have fun, laugh, enjoy the trading ride together. It's all in the name of good podcasting fun. So remember, take it easy, don't bet the farm, and keep your seatbelts on at all times. Thank you for listening. Hello and welcome to episode 7 or appendix B of the Informal Economics for Traders miniseries, Canadian edition. Eric Mason, the informal economist himself, is here to answer questions from our token Canadian friend, Joel MC. So, I don't know where we want to kick this thing off or how much you guys want to piss around. Sorry, that's not the right word. How much you guys want to banter around before we get into this?
That is the correct word, Kyle. But
if you live in, Massachusetts, I suppose.
Fair enough. Joel, how is our dear Canadian friend? How are you doing? Are you feeling okay?
I'm doing well. Yeah, we're good up here. It's cold. It's like very cold.
I know. I keep sending you messages every time it snows and telling you to close the door.
Right?
Yeah.
If I can't close the door, I'm outside. It's so cold here.
You want to hear something funny, Joel?
Yeah.
So about 2 weeks ago, I switched my weather app to report in Celsius so that way I could tell you the temperature without having to convert it.
Yeah.
But all last week I was trying to figure out why in the hell it was minus 20 degrees on my phone, but every time I looked outside it was like not bad.
Real quick, something that frustrates me, and you guys, this doesn't apply to you guys. I get very angry when like my European friends will be like, why can't you just use a metric system? Oh, this and that. And I'm like, okay, listen, I get the metric system. Don't get me wrong. My problem is it's not that hard to convert between the two.
Right.
Just Celsius to Fahrenheit. Double it, add 32.
Yeah.
All right, like 2.54 centimeters is an inch. Like, is it a math problem with them? Like, is it like, the U.S., we get made fun of for being bad at math, but it's like very simple arithmetic shuts down their economy. Like, what are we doing?
I swear, I think that Canadians use the metric system simply so that way it looks colder than it actually is.
Oh, no.
Like if you're if you're used to Fahrenheit.
We use it to make things difficult. And actually, the Canadian metric... So here's the thing, right? Is we measure distance in kilometers.
Yeah.
We measure shorter distances in feet.
Oh, you guys are just... You guys don't know.
We don't do anything on one side or the other.
Do you use MPH?
The signs are... Okay, so here's the other one. We drive in kilometers per hour.
Yeah.
Short of maybe like a few like in the city places. How far is that? 14 miles. And we're going to drive 100 kilometers an hour to get there.
Right.
So you get there in 14 minutes. Good thing we don't have different units for time.
I know.
That'd be really annoying. Oh, so I had a conversation a couple of years ago with one of my European friends, and they were like, everything should be a base 10 system. I said, yes, like time.
Right. Good luck with that.
That's different. I'm like, what? No. You can't just be like upset at a clock. You're basically yelling at a clock.
Well, a ton of things are like base 12 for some reason, like fathoms and...
finance. A lot of financial world stuff's base 12. So the reason is because, in the same reason, a big reason why the U.S. uses a base 12 system is because it's more divisible, right? There's only two numbers that aren't 1 or 10 that you can divide 10 by.
Mm-hmm.
2 and 5.
Right.
On a base 12 system, it's, you know, obviously 1, 2, 3, 4, 6. Then you like, and if you go up to like 16, you know, you have there are four factors, right? Four times 3 is 12, 4 times 4 is 16. Like, it's much more divisible.
It's all about being able to divide it. That's fascinating. I didn't realize that.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, the concept, I say this to my friends all the time. The metric system has so many labels it doesn't use. What the hell is it? I use the term deciliter a lot.
I use mega miles, and nobody knows what I'm talking about.
What is a mega mile?
A million miles.
Oh, the sun is 93 mega miles from Earth.
Why does nobody use, like, decameters either?
No, that's always my argument. I was like, when was the last time you guys used decameter or kiloliter?
Right.
It's like six trash cans full of water. What? What is that unit? Like, what is that? Like,
we call a kiloliter a cube.
A cube.
I'm so okay.
A thousand liters.
Oh,
we call it a cube.
When I'm a Joel, when do you use that? Like when do you have to use it?
So, chemicals. My brother-in-law sells chemicals. A cube is 1 meter by 1 meter, which if you convert that to fluid is 1,000 liters, right?
Interesting. Yeah, yeah.
And so we just call it a cube. 1,000 liters. That's so that you would never use kiloliter.
I want to use a cube. So it comes from the term cubic meter, is where you get the word cube?
Yeah, exactly.
I like that a lot.
I thought it was just 10 cubed.
No.
Which it is.
It is, but it's because it's a cubic meter.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which works out to 1,000 liters.
Canadian economics, look at that.
Yeah, look at that. Right? Just US times 0.6, which is also, I believe, the currency exchange is right now.
Before we get into the economics, we'll get there, but SNL.
No, we won't.
You guys, now that we're on this stuff, do you guys see those SNL skits where he's talking about building America? And he's like, we will have a word, there'll be two words for temperature. One will be Celsius, and everyone will understand it. And the other, Fahrenheit. How do you spell that? No one knows.
Oh, I have seen those. He sounds like Nostradamus, like doing predictions. Yeah. Right? Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
I think, controversial opinion, I think all temperature systems are stupid. It should just be Kelvin.
Yeah, you could go with that.
Weirdest one. It's the one that's just Calvin's a straight scale from sense. Like zero to the max. Yeah.
Yeah. What is zero? Like, what is zero in Fahrenheit? What's zero in Celsius? It's like, oh, when water freezes at this specific air pressure, at this specific
time. Right, that's at sea level, right?
Yes. Yeah. That's my anthill I'll die on, is that we should get rid of all temperatures. I hate when people are like, oh, it was 12 degrees yesterday, now it's 24 degrees. We doubled the heat. It's like, no, heat has not been doubled.
That's very true. So what temperature is it right now where you're at?
Okay, so it's like 72 Kelvin right now, something like that.
No, that can't be right, can it?
272 Kelvin, sorry.
That sounds more reasonable.
Hey, whoa, Eric, where are you?
It's sunny and 272 degrees today. Said no one ever.
I'll die on this hill happily.
All right. Joel, what kind of economics questions you got for us?
Okay. The first one we're going to jump into is the most popular right now. And how are the tariffs going to affect Canada, do you think, versus how they would affect the States? Specifically, how would they affect Canada?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's all about, when you talk about tariffs, I don't want to say they affect every country the same, but one of the big things with tariffs is that it increases costs. And so if you have two countries that are experiencing asymmetric cost effects, and have declining income, and one country has declining income and one country has increasing income, you're going to end up with problems, right? Because now you're just increasing the cost across the board, even if the marginal cost increases aren't as high. In other words, I think one of the things that Canada struggled with over the last five-ish years is cost of living and inflation have been two struggles. And Joel, correct me if I'm wrong here, you live there.
Very correct.
I mean, I recently saw that about 10 years ago, it took about 4 to 5 times the average income to buy a house in most urbanized Canada. Now it's like 12.
Yeah, I would believe all of that.
Yeah, that's an insane increase that really is hard to stomach. That's too much of an increase in too short a period of time. Additionally, Canada's having some problems right now with... I want to make sure I use the correct term. I want to make sure I say this clear right now. Balancing out its GDP. In other words, Canada has had increasing GDP and has fared fairly well in the global north post-pandemic. Mm-hmm. But its GDP growth, its GDP per capita is declining. So it's entered a per capita technical recession. And this is where economists, we can lose the, you know, lose the picture here. Because I can be like, oh, look, Canada's economy is growing. That's all we should care about. But if the GDP per capita, that's like telling the average Canadian, no, you're doing fine. I know you have less money, but the economy's bigger.
Right, this part of you.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. So yep. Canada's been a big driver of immigration, which has helped their economy in some ways, but also has diluted the GDP per capita number. But I mean, usually immigration's not a net positive. So how do I think it's going to hurt? I think it's going to hurt Canada more than the U.S.
Right.
Because in a lot of ways, Canada's more dependent on cheap exports, or sorry, cheap friction for exporting goods, like with the tar, the oil sands and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Is that we're an easier trade partner. You have so many developed channels. Canada has so many developed channels into the U.S. where the U.S. just already has, you know, has different port access around the world, already has those systems built in there. There's a higher barrier to find a new trading partner.
Yeah.
So, one question then regarding the tariffs, can we even implement them on Canada? Because I was under the impression that NAFTA was like standardizing trade between Mexico and Canada and U.S.
Yeah, NAFTA
NAFTA's
is
gone.
Yeah, it doesn't really exist anymore.
Did it go away? Really? When did that happen?
It's been replaced with like the Canadian Mexico U.S. or Canadian U.S. Mexico.
Okay.
Like, trade.
Oh, was that the one that made the like the Interstate 55 that's supposed to run through like Mexico all the way through the U.S. like connect the two of them?
I mean, that would definitely probably be part of those talks, right? Because trucking is just.
But huge. I mean, there's agreements in place that should be standardizing all this stuff. I would have thought.
Yes, but don't forget, unless it's ratified by Congress, it's not a treaty.
Gotcha. Okay.
That's why I've always felt very weird when people keep saying the Paris Treaty.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, the Treaty of Paris, like, ended the Revolutionary War, and they're like, no, the Climate Accords, it's the Paris Treaty. I'm like, it's not a treaty. It has to be voted by 66% of Congress has to ratify a treaty. It's just the government action. It's just executive action.
Interesting.
Yeah, so.
Okay.
That's still, I don't know, loving revenue is still a role of Congress, but it has been for the last, like, 150 years kind of passed off to the presidency. There's probably an attorney, there is an attorney that could definitely say that better than I just said it, but more or less that's how it's interpreted.
Okay.
Gotcha. Thank you.
I'll be quiet now.
And so it'll just, the tariffs are going to increase all of our costs just across the board.
Yeah.
Because
it depends on the type of good.
Okay.
So if it's a good that's, you know, has a lot of substitutes, especially the domestic substitutes, if it's a good that doesn't have, you know, is economically sensitive, in other words, like it's a luxury good. Well, the producer is just will have to eat more of that tariff. They'll end up having to, you know, just have a lesser profit to be able to sell it. If it's an insensitive, economically insensitive good, so good that, you know, you buy the same amount regardless of what your income is, then the tariff's going to be passed on to the consumer, because why would the producer take less money if you're going to buy it anyways? And
right.
You guys sell a lot of oil. You sell kind of like the poster child for economically insensitive. So Canada is probably going to pass a lot of those tariffs onto the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Especially the energy market. You know, when I gave my presentation for 2025, one of the things I talked about was like, you know, the U.S. and U.S., Canada, and Mexico combined for, you know, approximately $1.8 trillion in trade.
Mm-hmm.
And the two biggest things we trade among each other or get sold to the U.S., oil and energy from the Great White North, and agricultural products from our friends down south, which are two things that drive inflation. There are two things that are considered fairly economically inelastic. So I'm like, those tariffs are getting paid by the U.S. consumer. But here's the thing, the U.S. can absorb more damage. At the end of the day, the U.S. is just a more resilient economy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's $10 trillion ahead of second place. It's just...
Right.
Like, you could have a great... The U.S. could enter a Great Depression and still be the largest economy on Earth. Like, weird.
It's so many amazing economy facts like that. I love listening to those.
Absolutely. And so the other question then, unless you have something more to say about that.
No, go on to the next question.
Okay, so if it's more expensive for us to export into the States, then the American companies are going to look for alternatives in the States, which will ultimately slow our economy, right?
Yes.
And that's probably the biggest problem that we'll face, is like an already declining GDP is now going to slow.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean,
is there other? I mean, well, I guess the amount of goods that America wants to import is probably going to be significantly higher than any other country in the world. Yeah. Probably even more than probably the rest of the world combined. Maybe I'd even venture to guess.
Yeah, it could be up there. It could be. You know, it could honestly rival domestic demand in Canada for products.
Wow, that's okay. So this could be. There's not going to be a way to like offshore that to like Europe or find other people to pick up our slack. Is kind of the point I was getting at there.
Right.
Yeah.
No, we're a very heavy consumer-driven economy. Yeah. Our marginal propensity of consumption, which is if you give an American a dollar, how much do they spend? Well, $1.05.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Yeah. I believe you.
The sad thing about tariffs, especially the sad thing about tariffs between two historically incredibly close nations, like, you know, it really, there are probably no nation on earth that has such a unique relationship as the U.S. and Canada, you know, behemoth.
Right.
Based on massive. That, though, do you think that they'll ever actually get implemented?
I sneakily don't think they will.
I don't think so either.
That may age like milk.
Yeah.
But I think it's a political move to elicit a reaction. I don't think it's an economic game plan.
Yeah, I would agree.
For a lot of us Canadians, it's like we're taking it as a good thing. This is exactly what the Canadian government needed to build a pipeline to a different port, to build shipyards that can haul aluminum and steel to Japan,
mm-hmm.
right? If you export, like, it's like 78% or 93% of our export goes to the U.S. If we change that by 20%, then we can charge more.
Yeah, it just makes you more resilient, too, yeah.
And we're more resilient, and our oil that's the cheapest oil in the world all of a sudden can be on par.
Yeah.
Are you concerned about on the oil side? Like, it's very hard to process oil sands.
Yeah.
Like, Canada's such an interesting country because you are one of the top countries in every effing statistic. Like, every statistic from education to healthcare to social mobility. Like Canada beats the crap out of most countries. You're basically a giant, fat, wide Norway with 11 times the population. Like, no, that's a compliment. If you look at the Human Development Index, all right, so that's the standard of living.
All right,
the number one place in the world is actually Massachusetts, and it is like 96.1, and Alberta, Canada is like 0.960. Norway has the highest of any entire country. But I look at that and I'm just like, I'm surprised there hasn't been more capital investment in there. Like, somebody hasn't built, there hasn't been this move to build ports. There hasn't been this move to build refineries that can process your own oil. Like, you have the technical expertise to refine your own oil. You're not Saudi Arabia and Iran. Like, you can process your own oil.
Why do it if there's no need to, though? I mean, can they do
it
cheaper?
That's a good point.
That's the question.
We send it to Chicago and they do the work.
Right.
Then they add 20% and send it back.
Right.
Exactly. It's such a bizarre relationship when the U.S. is the cheaper technical labor, because that's not the case in, like, literally any other field. You know, it's funny, before the Iran sanctions, we were, like, one of the only countries on Earth that could process Iranian oil. And that, here's the weird part. The U.S. hasn't built a new oil refinery in decades. So, like, this is just better processes. And I always get confused with Canada, because I'm like, you can do it. You're, like, the only country on Earth that has those types of resources, I mean, aside from the U.S., that could reasonably scale up. Like, Norway's problem is Norway only has 5 million people. So it's like, we're going to build an entire oil refinery for 5 million people. Like, that's insane. I mean, I'm sure they have some oil refinery, but they're not going to do, like, have Galveston, Texas or something.
Right.
So as a Canadian, do you view that as a positive? Because it is a positive economic thing for the world if you guys have more ways to export. That's going to lower costs everywhere.
What is the Canadian population?
Around 40 million, I think. 42, maybe.
My bet's 55 million. I don't know if I'm good.
40.1.
Oh, look at that.
About as much as, just a little bit more than California.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I'm not going to get political, but the political energy in Canada is what stunts that growth and that change.
Yeah.
I think that's all it is. I think there's opportunity. Businesses would come. Businesses would develop, but there's a lot of rules and a lot of hurdles, and it's just easier if they can build it on the other side of the border and not have to answer to anybody. You ship it down to the States, we'll figure it out from here.
You think there's a lot of red tape regulation wise, maybe? That's
yeah. And I mean, even taxes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like, we pay like 50% tax.
That's insane.
Right? So why would you do that here? Why would you do that here when you can get the same product? You're getting our product, the exact same product. We're just going to ship it over the border. And then you can do the work in America.
Right. Wow. 50%. Jeez.
Right? Like, so income tax is 30. Like, I pay a federal income tax of, that's around 25, 26. And that provincial income tax of 10 to 12. So Jesus. I'm at like 40% there. We pay a 5% government sales tax on every good purchase. So that's at 45. They've got taxes on fuel. You pay like property tax, everything.
Mm.
And in Alberta, we have GST at 5%. But in like BC and Ontario and those places, they have HST, which is harmonized, which there's GST is federal. 5% and then a harmonized tax, so they have an extra 7%. So where we're paying 5% federal tax, they're paying like 12 to 13% sales tax. So I mean, you take my example, and a lot of those provinces have even higher income tax than Alberta at 10%, right? So people are paying more than 50% tax. Why would a business come here? You know how much you have to pay your employees so that they can survive when they're paying 50% tax?
Yeah, I mean, even the idea of like the VAT tax is like, that's a tax on GDP. Like, that's a tax that you are applying for making things more valuable. Of course, you're going to ship your oil to the United States because you'd prefer, you know, you get to write that off of your business as an expense, right?
Right.
The revenue being an expense. I mean, my whole thing is the carbon offset, the tax has always been very perplexing to me. Like, they charge that to schools.
What?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like I say, that's why there's no businesses here. So,
Is that true?
I think that's a part of it. It might not be the only reason that businesses aren't, like, rushing to Canada for our oil and developing Canada. They come here, they take the product, and they ship it to the States.
It's a very export focused business expansion.
It is.
Cars is always what I look at. I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
And that's always interesting too, but like, tariffs didn't cause that situation. Tariffs couldn't solve that situation, but it just creates more friction. And we should be promoting our allies. We should be like, something I always love is we're all better off. Capitalism is a tide that raises all boats. And but I think a lot of people miss the target here when they think that Canada doesn't have any internal problems. Just like every country has internal problems. That's a true thing with everything. Right. I always call it idolation by ignorance. Is you love something because you don't know anything about it. It's like when people tell me Spain's a great place, and I'm like, you should see where they grow food in Spain and what are like greenhouses with indentured servants that gets smuggled in. I'm like, you eat an apple. If you're eating an apple in Europe, you're pretty close to not the safest business practices. Oh, more morally enjoyable.
Wow.
Oh, it's a great place.
Well, that was one of the questions you had on there, is about whether you would say Canada is a resource export country.
Yeah.
I think we're kind of touching around that area there.
Yeah, kind of. Not necessarily. I wouldn't just say just resources, but it builds its businesses on sending its finished products out the door. So I would say it's more of an export base.
I look out this window here and look at Toronto, and that looks like a pretty developed city center. I mean, there's some
absolutely
big buildings there. That speaks to me of like advanced processes or other products being produced there.
Yeah, intensified economies, absolutely. But there's more money to be made selling your products to the U.S. on a global market. So those people make more money, and they can build nice buildings like that. I mean, let's not act like Toronto is one of the best cities on earth. Like it absolutely is.
Right. Totally.
But to tax like public schools for burning fossil fuels is a little weird, because you're taking money away from educating people
for what?
I don't know, because carbon offsets don't work. Like, we're all aware of that, right? Like,
yeah. Yeah.
But one of my favorite studies ever read is that they were taking, there's these really dirty stoves that were used. They're used all around the world, but it was in sub-Saharan Africa, and these really dirty wood burning stoves. So they gave everybody in one area of the country these really clean burning stoves. And what they noticed, and this was all endorsed, verified carbon offsets. So some college students were like, oh, let's go see if that really reduced carbon emissions. And every house they walked into was using both stoves. Because they're like, oh, this is more efficient for cooking. And I'm like, yeah, because it doesn't work. It doesn't work at all. Let me teach you a concept called nuclear energy. But yeah, it's weird when government's paying itself.
Right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Can we talk about the dollar?
Do you love the dollar? You have good-looking money, too.
Oh, yeah, we do. Looney? Yeah. Man, that's a good name, too.
And a toonie. Toonie. We're so original.
Yeah.
How do you feel about leaders of other countries being on your currency?
Truth be told, personally, it doesn't affect me.
Okay.
As long as that money's in my pocket.
Right.
Yeah.
Which other country leaders are you speaking of? I assume you mean like the Queen of England?
Yeah.
That, I mean, that is still your queen, though, isn't it?
Is she gone?
Well, I mean, was.
Yeah. He's a king now, but.
Did you hear Australia's like, we're not taking any of the queen out of circulation? Like, there'll probably never be King Charles bills in circulation because they're like, nah, we want to keep the queen bills. Like, I don't care, Australia, but I like it.
Yeah, you may as well. We've had this money for years. No point changing it now.
Right? Yeah, but. Amazingly nice looking currency.
Yeah. And it's all the same size. And you can actually like peel it apart. American money is so hard to know how many bills you have. Like it sticks together and it's so thin. And then Mexican money is all a different size in your wallet.
Euro money is like that too, isn't it? Where they're all different size bills.
I've never been to Europe, but so like ours is like now it's plastic. And you can take it apart. You can feel it. We do have great money.
When you say take it apart, do you just mean like it's easy to count? Or are you guys, is this some cool Canadian bill trick that I don't know about?
taking the one and the zero off of two bills to make a bigger one?
Like, go to the bank, get a stack of new American $1 bills, and fan them out, spread them around.
Yeah.
And then go get, you can't get Canadian ones, but you can get Canadian fives. Get Canadian fives and just feel the difference. You never lay down two bills thinking you only have one.
That's good. Composite bills are fascinating. What do you mean you can't get ones?
We don't have $1 bills.
You got rid of those? We can't even get rid of the penny here. How'd you do that?
No, we haven't had $1 bills since, it would be in the 80s. I've never had them.
Oh, did you guys go all coins for the ones?
Yeah, they got rid of the $1 bill and got the loonie.
Yeah, okay.
And then they got in, would have been like early 90s, they got rid of the $2 bill and went to a toonie.
Okay, I'm low-key a fan of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm actually a fan of that. I thought you just didn't have a unit of car, like $1. Like, there was never, like, everybody's just tipping fives everywhere. Yeah. You're tipping, but like, everybody's tipping fives around. I was like, maybe that's why your economy is a different. Everybody's rounding up to $5.
That adds up.
No, it's just coins. Ones and twos are coins.
Right. My dad went to Canada all the time to go hunting in the Maritimes, and he'd bring me back like different stuff from Canada. And I think my dad might actually be the most pro-Canadian American to ever live, pro-Canada American ever to live.
More than us? I feel like we're pretty pro-Canada.
Yeah, no, I would describe myself as incredibly pro-Canada, and I look like a warhawk compared to my father. Like, it is... I think if you went to my dad, you're like, we're going to form, like, the way Belarus and Russia, like, have that, like, commonwealth, whatever that thing is. I think that's what my dad would like to see between Canada and the U.S. Like, you could just walk across the border. Everybody, like, you should be able to go to a store in California, pay with Canadian money, and they have, like, an active exchange. Yeah. I think that would be his ideal unification.
Oh, that would be sweet.
So, the question you have written in here is talking about bringing the Canadian dollar back from Lowe's, but... We were talking a little bit on last night's recording, which came out on President's Day, about how countries will devalue their currency in order to give themselves more favorable trade benefits. So is that what's going on here with Canada, do you think? Or is there something more going on with the dollar being weak? the Canadian dollar being weak.
From my perspective, that's
why. Oh, yeah, you. This is not a me thing.
Jeff has like a little graph. So that is the reason. It's an export-driven economy, especially when you're trading with a much stronger currency. There's no benefit for your currency being stronger on the international trade market. But knowing where Joel lives and knowing what Joel does, oh, dude, I fail for you, man. That sucks because you living in that area of the country and being engaged in a high production industry and being a high productive individual, you're getting paid in Canadian dollars. And you're like, I want to buy stuff from other countries. I want to buy stuff from the U.S. I don't want to use the word luxury good, but premium goods. And you're like, yeah, my currency's crap against the rest of the market.
Like, oh, yeah.
That's going to be frustrating. That's like genuinely has to be frustrating if you're like, oh, I want to download Call of Duty. And you're like, oh, it's disproportionately higher.
Because the hoodie thing, I mean, I don't know if you want to talk about that, but I mean, that's a great example. Yeah.
So we got Vanta hoodies and everyone paid $70.
Yeah, it's $70 for the hoodie and shipping. US shipping, yeah. I should say.
And US shipping. And then it was $50 extra to ship it to Canada.
Is that US and bucks or Canadian bucks at this point?
US. 50 US extra.
Yeah.
And so it come out to $130 US. And you convert it to Canadian, that is a $200 hoodie that I will not wear while I eat.
Yeah, that is too good of an economic. Can I use that for class? I might actually, I'll shout you up. I might actually use that. That's a great example of currency.
Oh, it's wild. Absolutely. Yeah. Or like we got back from a holiday where we went to Houston and like a hotel room where you guys would pay $200 or $175 for a night. For us, it's like we're touching like $350. Mm-hmm.
That's where a lot of, I think, policymakers get confused, where they think if you want to buy something in Canada, it's just 30% more because the currency is 30% cheaper. No. Purchase power parity is a real thing. And it must be very frustrating, like I said, as a high productive individual in a high productive industry, that you're basically paying less, you're like proportionally way less. Like,
it's actually a really good example of this too in the book Iceland Secret by Jared Bibler. He talks about how before the 2008 financial crisis, people in Iceland, their economy was so driven on steroids by the stuff that the banks were doing with buying their shares and just propping everything up. But people were leaving Reykjavik to fly to Boston to shop there because they could buy things for like 20 times cheaper than what they're paying in Iceland. Yeah. It was cheaper to fly there and even pay the flights to go buy like computers and stuff.
Yeah, there's a meme that's like, in Iceland, we locked up the bankers and bailed out the people.
No, you didn't.
The corona went to from like 1 to 20, 1 to 60. I think at one point it was like 1 to 6, to 1 to 1200.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you destroyed everybody's retirement.
Mm-hmm.
But we bailed out the people. No,
you did not.
You can't bail out the people. That's not. You just can't print a bunch of money and be like, here you go.
Also, all those people that they say they put in jail, they didn't really go to jail. I talked to the guy who prosecuted him, who uncovered all this stuff. Like he's complaining about the fact that these people still haven't been held accountable.
I got to see what USD.
Yeah, that's.
Do.
I remember that.
Yeah.
Also, Corona is such a horrible name.
So, what is the actual exchange rate right now?
It's 1 to 40 right now, so let's see. What a weird currency, by the way, just for the record.
The Corona?
Corona. Yeah, I don't like that.
Sounds like a shit beer. No.
How angry you'd be if you got sponsored by Corona?
I know, right? Or if that lost it for me.
It's called a Corona?
Corona, like K-R-O-N-A.
Yeah, so the currency went 1 to 60 just before the recession, December 2007, to 1 to 140. Oh, sorry, 100 and looks like 145. Like overnight, literally in the course of 2 months, you had 100% inflation or 1200% inflation over that time period.
Wow.
We bailed out the people. It's never come back down. That's the fun part. The lowest it's been is 100. So you erased, that would be about 60%, a little more, about the 60% inflation. I bailed out the people. No, you didn't. You destroyed their retirement. Because Iceland, I need to politely explain to you that you don't really have an economy.
Not anymore.
Right.
You have a bunch of Americans who like to visit you because they don't want to be on a plane too long. If tourism and fishing are your two biggest industries, you're a developing country. Just throwing it out there. If people show up because they want to walk around and look at pretty rocks, and then you fish, that's not like Microsoft being part of your country.
Let's play that game a little further. What other countries have tourism and fishing as their main income source? Caribbean? That sounds like something maybe Norway might be.
If you don't count a third of their economy just being dirty, dirty gas and oil.
Yeah, take out the oil portion,
I always love that. It's like, if Norway took climate change serious, they would immediately enter a Great Depression-level recession. See, Norway's one of those funny countries, because you look at them and the dirtier they get, where it's like, oh, look at all this wealth we have. We should be more like Norway. It's like, you have one of the highest rates of antidepressant usage in the world. You have 5 million people live there. They're the size of Massachusetts. You subtract Boston from Massachusetts. They're microscopic. So they have all this oil, and they export it. It gets burnt everywhere in the world. Produces all the CO2. If they took climate change serious, they would have, like, no money. They'd have no economy. And you're like, well, what's their second largest economy? Large-scale fishing. It's like, Norway, why do you hate the environment so much? Like, what did it do to you?
Right. It stuck them in the North Arctic Circle.
All we do is kill marine life. That's our main thing we do.
They're just trying to make the Caribbean move up north. That's all they're trying to do.
Yeah, exactly. It's a long-term play. Like, yes. You see Norway building like fake beaches and beachfront property. Like, guys, it's going to pay off. I'm just telling you.
Sooner or later.
It is, one of the things with Canada, especially when it comes to their currency, is that it's kind of what I was talking about earlier, where you have this really, really advanced workforce, this hyper-intelligent, hyper-productive workforce that gets dragged down a lot. And one of the things that hurts Canada a lot, and you said better than I could ever, Joel, is that like there's a lot of non-productive regulations and red tape.
Yeah.
And you pay for that. Like, you actually, like, literally you, Joel, but you, the Canadian people, have to pay for that. And that is an efficiency.
How much of that is Canadian, like, government and stuff that they put in place, and how much of that is inherited from the 1,000-year-old monarchy that they descended from?
Oh, I bet. Generally speaking, England didn't have a good history of being nice to its England wasn't walking around enforcing like air quality standards. I think it's a lot of that. I don't know. I think Canada's kind of an interesting cat because for such a large country, it's fairly homogenous.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's so centralized in urban areas, and Joel yelled on this, that it makes it easier for politicians to get elected through targeting. People who may not have to feel the effects of their policies. Sometimes there's a term that was coined after the pandemic called luxury politics. Mm. I always find very interesting. The idea that you like support a policy because you don't have to deal with the negative externalities.
Oh, yeah, tax the rich because I'm not rich. Kind of thing.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
I think that kind of happens in there. So if you're winning elections because you're propagating regulations, and somebody like Joel is sitting there like, this is weakening my currency, and I'm the guy making the money that supports the country. Like, it's going to make you right. That's going to change your spending habits.
But also, it's interesting the lack of attempts to educate themselves. I mean, I listen to you guys, right? I read, but it's incredible how many people don't understand that if the businesses aren't here, there's no jobs. If there's no jobs, there's no demand for people. If there's no demand for people, then the people that are working can get paid less. If you doubled the amount of work that was here and have the amount of people, all of a sudden everyone wants the people and they pay more.
Right. Supply and demand. Yeah.
But people don't see it that way. They just see it as, well, we got to tax the rich people who are the ones building the jobs so that I can have more than my share, right? I want my share, plus I want some of his share.
Hmm.
But in order to take some of his share, you have to give up some of your share. But they don't see it that way.
No, and one of the frustrating parts is that there's only one thing that grows economies, and that's capital investment. That's it.
Right.
It's not government expenditure. It's not net exports. It's not consumption. It's investment. It, unfortunately, for a certain group of people, it is an uncomfortable reality that wealthy people usually pretty good at investment. They're usually pretty good at knowing.
Absolutely.
I was at a conference a little while ago, and we were this very similar, but on the U.S. side, this conversation came up, and I said, you know, governments never tax people into prosperity. That's never happened. Never will happen.
Right.
Like, it's very difficult.
It's so good. Very
difficult for government to know where to invest. Like, a big reason we have the best defense industry in the world is because we don't have a defense industry that's run by the U.S. government. Like, we have companies that are coming up with insane things.
Private sector. Yeah.
I'm also not a big believer in the military-industrial complex, only because, like Procter & Gamble makes more money, makes, like, 20 times more money than Northrop Grumman. And I'm like, wouldn't they make more money?
Oh, yeah. It's good. Right.
Procter & Gamble. Like, how is it more profitable to sell razors than, like, stealth planes? You know, I was just saying. Like,
right.
just a quick question about that. Like, when the U.S. sells a bunch of stealth planes to, like, Israel or the U.K., who are they paying, and who's actually, like, on the transaction of that? Like, who's actually getting the money?
I'm going to split that question into two answers because you mentioned Israel. Mm-hmm. Israel will get permission from the U.S. government, and then, like, Lockheed Martin will get permission from the government, and they make a specific I model of mm-hmm. whatever they do, like the F-35I. Is what, you know, been in the news.
Okay.
Another example, we can also go to Canada. But if you're just exporting it, like, say, Morocco just bought a bunch of F-35s. The U.S. government gives permission to to Lockheed mm-hmm. to sell them.
Okay.
Then there's the C variation, which is for our dear Canadian friends up north, where they get license built. So you have the CF-18. Now, a lot of people think, like, a CF-18 is the same as an F-18 in the U.S. military. No. Mm-hmm. A lot of times Canada's customizing for what it needs. And
it has to start in the cold.
What's that? It
has to start in cold weather.
You see, got the crank,
right?
They put block eaters in them.
It's funny, when I was at the conference and you can't tax into prosperity is always kind of a funny thing to say because people know that. But one of the things I said is, like, you need to make capital. There's a rule. Capital always flows to its most efficient and highest return mean of production. Dollars always go to where the greatest return you get, keeping risk the same, right?
That's why so many Canadians invest in our markets.
Yeah,
it makes a ton of sense.
Absolutely.
If you want to grow job markets, you have to make the people the best return on investment. And when you have prohibitively high taxes, and when you are basically penalizing success, you're going to disincentivize people actually wanting to invest in individuals. Which, again, that's why the Canadian paradox is so crazy to me, because it's like, so you must have crappy schools. It's like, oh, no, Canada, I think, besides the U.S., has the most top 100 universities in the world. And it's like, you have all the stuff. That's so confusing to me. It's like, all the stuff's there. And it's just there's just a lot of taxation regulation that causes it not to expand.
Well, I think
it's always fascinating.
I was under the impression that a lot of, like, Canadian doctors and, like, highly educated people come to the U.S. to practice because they can make significantly more once they've gotten that great education from Canada.
Yeah. I mean, Canada's wild because I think I saw some stats a while ago, so they're probably outdated, but, like, the average Canadian doctor is making, like, $180,000 a year. And, like, the average U.S. doctor thinks, like, $400,000, $500,000. It's like, dude, you can go home. Like, it's easy to go home. Like, you can just,
you can work in New York and
literally take
drive
a 2-hour flight home every weekend. Right. It's not England.
Right.
And again, that's why the thing makes any discussion on tariffs, they're anti-growth. And I hate everything that's anti-growth. And it's sad to see it because, like, I actually get most of my news when I read it from international sources. Like, I listen to a lot of, like I'd rather listen to, like, a newspaper in Europe report on the U.S., than a U.S. newspaper report on the U.S. because I like hearing the outside perspective.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Yeah,
totally.
Yeah, and it's sad to see because I think we forget just, like, how close we are with Canada. Like, it is really a different type of relationship. It's even different than what we are with Mexico. I think the only relationship that supersedes it is our relationship with England, mm-hmm. which is a whole different level of history than Canada. But Yeah, it's just sad because, you know, when politics get in the way of economic growth, it hurts families. That's who it hurts. It's the average Canadian and the average American.
Absolutely.
I kind of want to know a little bit more about this other question you got on here, the last one, about why the Canadian oil is so much cheaper than oil in the rest of the world. Like, what makes it so much more economically, yeah, so I guess?
I actually wrote a paper on this about, God, probably 10 years ago now.
Perfect.
Of course you did.
It was it was one of the weirdest papers I've ever wrote. So I grew up pumping gas.
Yeah,
so,
oh, that's right. Yeah.
I once made a claim that no economist has pumped more gas than me, but I want like some random dude who like worked 20 years at like some place that fills up tankers to go get an econ degree and just be like, ha, I've defeated you. But, so a couple things that make it up is that we have, like the U.S. and Canada, like, we know what's up. Like, we have come up with an amazing system to process Canadian oil.
See, I thought it used to be, like, really cost prohibitive to develop it. I thought it used to be, like, or $90 a barrel was, like, the cutoff point where it was no longer cost effective to mine or to take some of that oil. But I'm completely wrong, or has that changed?
No, dude, when it first came out, you're 100% right. Because you had the sand.
Right.
And then we built pipelines. Yeah. We built these pipelines that heat up the sand, the sludge, to, like, 140 degrees, so it stays like really, you know, really
less viscous. Fluid. Yeah, okay.
Viscous, yeah. And you know, we figured out how to refine it really well, and it speaks to the technical cooperations because we have such a good relationship with Canada. These companies have great relationships with each other, and they're like, hey, I want to show you how to process this stuff, and they develop the technology together. And whenever you have two, you know, large economies, two powerful economies, trying to solve a problem, like, you're going to solve the problem, and you're going to solve it super efficiently. So it is kind of cool when you...
Is it actually like cheaper than like the Saudi Arabian oil or like the really...
No, nothing.
Really... Okay. Okay. Dude, Saudi oil, I was going to say, it's very impressive if we managed to get that kind of efficiency in our process.
Yeah, dude, Saudi oil is crazy.
They just like just shoots out of the ground basically, right? You just pick it up in buckets. Like
$37 a barrel to process.
Right.
Oh, like wow.
That, right? Like...
Yeah, we need to use all that up first.
Yeah, no, great idea, Kyle. Right? Let's do that.
Dude, that's what's happening with rare earth metals right now. Everybody's freaking out about all these places that have rare earth metals.
We use everybody else's up before we use ours.
Yeah, we have a ton of rare earth metals. We're just like, ooh, it's really gross to refine these. Ooh, you'll sell it to me and I can afford it because I'm the richest country on earth. Yes, thank you. You can have all the pollution.
Sure,
and
Ukraine. We'll come help you out if you want to give us access to all that.
Yeah, it is. That is actually what. But on the military side, there was Trudeau last year basically said he's never gonna. There's no intention of Canada, you know, spending up to the 2% NATO guideline.
Mm-hmm.
And under this government, yeah. And you know, I will be interested to see if Canada can get up there, only because like the margin permissivity of taxation in Canada is already so high. Like, you guys are just so taxed. I don't know where you squeeze out another 73 basis points of budget.
It's there.
Oh, I like that. Oh, Joel, hold on. Well, Joel, go down that road, buddy. What is that?
So there's a lot of stuff to cut.
So Elon has started a movement, right? He's doing all this checking in the American government. And all of the Canadian expenditures are public. So now there are Joe Schmo Canadians digging through the books.
Oh, no. This sounds like a revolution, haven't
it? Oh, yeah. And they're finding it just the same as he is, right? Now, they don't have the same power or this, like, they can't do anything about it other than out that it's happening. But
I mean, having transparency can change a lot of things.
Oh, yeah. And so I think there's lots of room for efficiencies and growth here.
I think Eric's trying to find. Can you tell him where he can find all your public expense records? I think he's trying to look through it right now.
Live reports.
I'll see. Yeah, I can find it. I can send it to you for sure.
I wonder if we can train a ChatGPT model on that.
He's already typing it. He's like, I got the model. It's going.
Right. Dude, so in Quincy, we publish a new year-to-date.
Yeah.
Every day.
Every day?
Every single day. So download in Excel. You can go by different departments. You can see all our local receipts.
You spent $8 million on animal... No, I'm just kidding.
We spent dude, I'll give Animal Control credit. They, you know, they do a good job, man.
Is this the percentage budget? Is that what that is?
Yeah.
Or does your guys' fiscal year start and end at a different time?
It starts July 1st.
Okay, so they're not like 2 months in and they're already blown through 80%.
They're about 60% of the way through the year, you would say?
Okay.
Yeah, about that. And also encumbrances, too. Like, money we've allocated, that's only available dollars.
So what are you finding in there? Are you digging through the budget sheet right now? Or?
Did you find the Canadian?
No, I haven't found it. I'm looking for it now.
It exists. If I can
Should
find
we do
it
a show that of us just going through it?
Oh, yeah.
I'm 100% on board with that idea if you guys want to do that. All right. Well, let's see if we can find that budget. We'll try to put together a time when we can do Appendix C of this, I guess.
Do you think we can invite Elon?
We can invite him. Whether he shows up or not, it's going to be a different story.
Eric, can you make a call?
He's not picking up your phone. He's not picking up my phone call.
No, it's like that's 7 degrees from Kevin Bacon. You don't have to phone Elon. You just have to phone someone who knows someone who knows someone who might know someone who can talk to Elon.
Funnily enough, that's the game that my wife wants us to start playing with, Eric, is the 7 degrees of separation to Quincy, Massachusetts. Just start giving you, like, famous
three.
People. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, three. I can do it in three. But it's so my sister-in-law is from Georgia, and obviously my wife's from West Virginia, and they often joke that anytime anything gets brought up, it's like your job from Quincy to be like, well, actually... And, like, does that relate back to Quincy?
You mentioned John Curtin. How do you tie him back?
John Curtin. I mentioned John Curtin.
Yeah. Well, no, you mentioned Australia and World War II, Eric.
Oh, okay, yeah, John Curtin. Okay, let's see. I get back to Massachusetts. I probably get back to Massachusetts in three moves on anything. So let's see. See, the go-to move is you just bring up the internet.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, then you're just like, oh, well, MIT. Right, let's see, how do we get from... So John Curtin. So he was prime minister. Is that what they call that position?
I think so.
Australia?
Yeah.
All right. So they obviously have a constitution. Mm-hmm. Their constitution is bicameral based, and the first constitution in the Western Hemisphere that had that was bicameral was the U.S. Constitution by James Madison, who drafted it off the Massachusetts Constitution. So he was elected using a format that was. And that got back to Quincy. I got to John Adams actually. That's... So yeah, there we go. It took me four, but I got there.
Well, I think that's probably gonna. Oh yeah, go ahead, Joel. Go ahead. I was just about to wrap us up.
Okay, I was just curious how much of this part is getting played, or are we still going? Or
I mean, I don't know. We'll see how it goes. See how it goes.
Is the next move here that we're gonna do the wasteful Canadian spending?
I kind of want to do that, Joel. Do you?
I'll start working on it. That's the only reason I want to.
Yeah. But yeah.
Yeah. I'm 100% on board for that. That sounds like a blast.
And then let me wrap this thing up then. We'll get a date picked out for that one too then. All right. Well, I think now that we got a plan for another follow-up episode, that's probably going to be the end for this one then. As always, I want to say thank you to everyone for sticking around to the end, and a special thank you to Eric Mason for neglecting his civic duties to come color with us. You can check out
I didn't neglect my civic duties.
I'll have to change that outro, I guess. You can visit theinformaleconomist.com, no caps, if you want to see more of Eric's work. If you have any questions about what was covered today, you can email or DM them to us. We'll be sure to answer them the next time Eric returns. Be back soon with another exciting episode, hopefully more successful than China's stimulus plans. Why did I write that in there? But until then,
widely unsuccessful. It'd be a good metaphor.
But until then, like, share, subscribe, all the things, and have a great day. This podcast is intended for informational and educational purposes only. It does not constitute financial or investment advice and should not be construed as such. The hosts, guests, and contributors of this podcast are not licensed financial advisors, brokers, or professionals. Any trading or investment decisions made based on the content of this podcast are solely at the listener's discretion and risk. Trading and investing in financial markets carry inherent risks, and past performance is not indicative of future results. Listeners should conduct their own research and seek advice from qualified financial professionals before making any financial decisions. The views, opinions, and information shared in this podcast are those of the individual contributors and do not necessarily reflect the views or policies of the podcast creators or associated organizations. Produced by China Shop Productions.
versus okay.
Yeah, versus more like what the actual effect would be like on your economy.
Yeah, it went off the. I'm not gonna lie. I brought what? That off, way the rails. Off the rails.
Yeah, my wife was looking through the transcript. She's like, "Oh my god, when did you even talk about tariffs?"
Yeah,
it's like 7 minutes of.
I say this every week, dream. But I need to buy Laura as much wine as she wants to consume.
She does not drink wine. But
what does she drink?
She doesn't really drink.
Is it like food or something she likes?
She's a big fan of chocolate.
Okay, good.
Right. Not dark chocolate, milk chocolate stuff. But let me think what else she would really like.
Because the Quinziopoly game I went to mail, you just got returned at my house. They lost it for 6 weeks.
Oh, yeah, I was wondering. I forgot about that.
Yeah, I was so close to texting you to be like, hey, like, did you get it? Not that you need to tell me. And then it just like came home and it was just sitting there, and I was like, oh my god, they just lost it. So I was sending a wow. UPS. I'm not dealing
with it. At least they found it.
I know, right? Yeah.
No, honestly, I give credit. Yeah. Like, fair enough. I wouldn't have found it.
I wouldn't have either.
It's lost.
It was just in some van. Right. 6 weeks.